Good morning. Our scripture reading this morning is from Matthew chapter 28, verses 1 to 10. After the Sabbath, at dawn on the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene and the other Mary went to look at the tomb. There was a violent earthquake, for an angel of the Lord came down from heaven and, going to the tomb, rolled back the stone and sat on it. His appearance was like lightning, and his clothes were white as snow. The guards were so afraid of him that they shook and became like dead men. The angel said to the women, "Do not be afraid, for I know that you are looking for Jesus who was crucified. He is not here. He has risen just as he said. Come and see the place where he lay. Then go quickly and tell his disciples, 'He has risen from the dead and is going ahead of you into Galilee. There you will see him. Now I have told you.' So the women hurried away from the tomb, afraid, yet filled with joy, and ran to tell his disciples. Suddenly, Jesus met them. 'Greetings,' he said. They came to him, clasped his feet, and worshiped him. And then Jesus said to them, 'Do not be afraid. Go and tell my brothers to go to Galilee. There they will see me.'"
Something, I'm told, is happening imminently. And when this event happens, everyone who witnesses will be in awe. Animals will be rejoicing, bellies will be full, and life will change for a season. Why? It's the arrival of Brood X here in the DC region. If you haven't already heard, there is a generation of cicadas that have been growing in the ground for the past 17 years. And this spring, we will witness billions of them. Yes, billions of these 1 to 2 inch long insects rise up from the ground and take over the area. They'll spend the next 4 to 6 weeks filling the air with as much noise as possible to find their mate and prepare for another generation to come 17 years later. You know, their arrival here is going to change life for many of us. According to a Washington Post article, these giant clumsy bugs get caught in people's hair and they get smashed on car windshields, and our pets feast on them to the point of getting sick. And apparently, some of us have even been emotionally scarred from past cicada encounters. If that's you, drop your story in the chat. You know, some of us are waiting with trepidation and annoyance. And then you have people like me, who have never experienced a Brood X infestation. We're looking forward to this event with curiosity. Will it really change life for us, as everyone says it will? You know, there's another event this weekend that we celebrate that changes life not just for us here living in the DC region for a few weeks every 17 years. Instead, the one who rose from the ground 2,000 years ago brings life to all and changes life for all who would recognize what happened. In our Words of Humanity series, we are looking at the longings of our human experience and how Jesus expresses and experiences those longings for us. And today we're going to explore this human longing to feel alive, to feel connected, to feel invigorated. We're often chasing after those feelings in our lives. But the reality in our world is that it seems far from that. After a year of COVID life, it seems that a lot of things that have brought us life in the past are a distant memory. In-person gatherings, air travel for vacation, meals indoor with friends, and hugs. You know, those things are all things that we look back to that bring us life. And here in this passage that Janelle just read for us, we are witnesses to a conversation. The words spoken are not necessarily of Jesus himself, but many do respond, but they respond to a longing for life that many of us might identify with. The women arrive at Jesus' tomb early in the morning, only to find a messenger there who says, in verse 7 and 8, "Go quickly and tell the disciples, 'He has risen from the dead and is going ahead of you into Galilee. There you will see him. Now I have told you.'" You know, Matthew's account of the resurrection scene is the most dramatic of all found in the four Gospels. There is an earthquake. An angel stunned guards and messages about Jesus going ahead of them into Galilee. God, who had apparently remained silent on Good Friday, is now answering the unspoken questions of Jesus' followers. And the words voiced by Jesus on the cross when he says, that we looked at last week, when he says, my God, why have you forsaken me? But the resurrection scene is more than a great miracle of resurrection from the dead. It's the heralding of the beginning of a new reality, a new course of history that is set not in relation just to Christ's birth, as our calendars would indicate, but a new course of history set in relation to Jesus' resurrection. And today I'd like for us to reflect on how the resurrection gives us three assurances found in verse 7. There's an assurance of hope, an assurance of life, an assurance of a new reality. And as we proceed today, I want you to consider where you might find these kinds of assurances in your lives, and how might Easter speak to them today. You know, in verses 2 and 3, Matthew introduces us to a scene that is ripe with expectations of death and tragedy. There's a dead body, there's a grave, a tombstone, and burial clothes. An earthquake and lightning accompany the arrival of an angel. There's grieving women. There's hardened soldiers fainting. If it was a screenplay or a trailer, the scene could give Marvel Avengers Endgame a run for the money. Here, the hero the woman thought Jesus would be seemed to be no longer. It's death to not only a wise and revered leader, but death to a new life and a new future that they thought was imminent in his triumphant arrival. Their expectations had been overturned. Matthew's dramatic account highlights the depths of our hopelessness and grief. He doesn't do this to pick at our wounds and sadness, but instead the Christian story names our emotions as real things. They're not feelings to push aside or to bury. The woman's arrival at the tomb early show how grief is part of our full humanity. And in telling us the story as it is, Matthew gives us permission to say, you know, our world isn't going the way we expect it to. We're angry, we're sad, and we're afraid. Life doesn't go the way we often expect. And there comes a point in life when we realize the saying, the sky's the limit. You can do anything in your life if you put your mind to it. That saying is much more easy to say than it is to become a reality. But here, the angel says, he is not here, he has risen. The resurrection of Jesus offers a hope like no other. If Jesus rose from the grave, if the tomb is empty, and if death really is defeated, and if sin's curse over humanity is broken, then hope is real. We can acknowledge our grief and our sadness, but not without hope. No longer do we have to hide our grief and disappointment. No longer do we have to cover it up with niceness or positive thinking. The grief is real, but the grief we feel is not definitive and all-encompassing. Why? Because the resurrection of Jesus demonstrates that someone is in control. Someone knows what's going on, and someone has a plan and the resources to execute the plan. The NIV translation of verse 6 doesn't quite convey the emphasis of the original Greek saying when it translates it, he has risen, as if Jesus was like a hibernating bear or a teenager sleeping in on the weekend. Oh, look at him. He's up now. The Greek is rendered in passive voice. So a better English translation might be, he was raised. And it's not just any passive voice. In this case, we know it's divine passive voice. Jesus didn't get up himself. It was God the Father who raised Jesus from the dead. There was agency behind Jesus' resurrection, which means that there was agency behind his death and his suffering, which means that there was agency behind all of Jesus' life and ministry. Agency is defined as an action or intervention, especially such as to produce a particular effect. And in our day and age, the word agency is often used to describe how we want to feel in control of our decisions and circumstances. It's a word that often accompanies arguments to reduce power imbalances, particularly for those who are marginalized. They, or we, want agency. And in a sense, agency is important for us as humans to step into the fullness of our human dignity. Yet this human agency is often fleeting. Too often we find ourselves hoping in our agency rather than hoping in the agency of God. The resurrection of Jesus gives hope to our lives now because it means that there is divine agency behind every single circumstance in our world and in our lives. God's action and intervention produces a particular effect in our lives. And that's part of God's plan. The resurrection gives hope because it helps us frame our story in God's story that is unfolding in history. And I think this is partly why what the writer of Hebrews is trying to get at in Hebrews 11 verse 1 when he says, faith is confidence in what we hope for and assurance about what we do not see. You know, we don't see a lot of what is going on around us. We think we see what is going on, but we don't see really. But the Easter story grounds hope in something that the women see and what the disciples see. They see an empty tomb, and in a few moments, they're going to see a resurrected Jesus. It's hope in this risen Jesus, and we are invited to see that same hope in the Easter story. You know, like many of you may have been doing during the pandemic, Julia and I have enjoyed our fair share of streaming media. We've watched one memorable documentary named Meru, named after the mountain in the Indian Himalayas. And this movie documents the attempts of these three men, Conrad Anker, Jimmy Chin, and Renan Ozturk, to climb Meru, a mountain that no one ever has successfully summited. And unlike a mountain like Everest, where climbers often have the support of Sherpas, and these three men set out to climb this 21,000-foot mountain on their own, hauling 200 pounds of gear and 7 days of food along with them. And that's before reaching the final 1,500 feet of sheer granite to the summit, known as the shark fin. And unlike Everest, which climbers can say is really like a really, really long, tough hike, Meru requires years of experience in ice climbing and rock climbing to succeed. And unfortunately, in their expedition, they encountered a 10-foot snowstorm, which extended their climb to 20 days living on the side of a mountain with 7 days worth of food. And ultimately, they had to abandon their climb just 100 meters from the summit. They returned dejected back to their regular lives, vowing never to return. Yet they could not ignore the call of the mountain. And 3 years later, they rallied themselves to attempt it again, and this time successfully. Though no one has since summited Meru since these three men, the fact that they have gone ahead shows what is possible. You know, the resurrection scene too also shows what is possible. The angel instructs the women to tell the disciples about Jesus, telling them he is going ahead of you. What we see here is that what's possible is not just life after death, but how this one life after death shows the kind of life that is possible now. You know, for Jews in Jesus' time, his death was completely unexpected, but even more so was his resurrection. You see, Jews did believe in a bodily resurrection, but they believed that it would happen once, in one instance, when the long-awaited Messiah would come to deliver them as a people group, and when the Messiah arrived, Israel would be all raised up to their rightful place as God's special people amongst the nations, but so too would the dead be raised up in bodily resurrection. Life would be good and perfect at some point in the future when the Messiah arrived. In fact, that's what our sisters and brothers of the Jewish faith still hold on to. But when Jesus died and rose again, first, ahead of everyone else, the expectations of these first century Jews were thrown out the window. Jesus died and rose again, but Rome was still the ruling empire. Israel was still occupied. The dead were still dead. Well, most of them were. In the previous chapter, Matthew describes how some had risen when Jesus was crucified. But no Jew had imagined a two-stage resurrection. Life didn't seem to have changed for them. But the angel's word says, he is going on ahead of you, is an indication that life had changed. It was an assurance of life. Somehow Jesus' resurrection pointed to this new reality of what was possible. So while their lives and their world hadn't immediately changed, Jesus' resurrection points to a future reality that changes how they might live in the present and how we might live in the present. The resurrection means that we can progress through seasons of being stuck and stagnant. Like the women who thought their world was thrown upside down with the death of their rabbi, we too may find ourselves in similar places. We may feel stuck and stagnant. Pandemic life has got us feeling that life is on a permanent, has pressed a permanent pause button. But the resurrection reminds us that since God is alive, our grief and our traumas aren't life defining. There is life that blossoms out of it. And whatever seems stolen or dead or buried and forgotten doesn't and will not remain so. Jesus' resurrection gives hope that life can multiply out of it. And not only can life come from what seems dead, our lives can give life to others in that process. If Jesus is really alive, then we can share in this life that he has begun. And that's why the angels tell the women to go quickly and tell the disciples. This act alone of commissioning the women to report an eyewitness account in a patriarchal society was just a first fruit of this new world that Jesus began. In doing so, God was saying that these women's lives matter. Their words matter, not just the words of a man. And because a risen Jesus matters, and he is going ahead of you. That's the assurance of life we have in the resurrection. You know, as a risen Jesus matters because he points to, this third assurance that is offered to us. The angels ask the women to convey the message to the disciples. There, you will see him. There in Galilee, in this case. And this statement is an assurance of a new reality. The question is will the women respond in faith and obedience to this promise to experience this new reality? In verse 8 and 9, Matthew tells us that the women were afraid, but they were filled with joy. That's their reality right now. But they cannot ignore the reality that's been presented before them, as incredulous as it may sound. A dead teacher alive? Are you kidding me? Angels talking? Still, they hurry away and run to find the disciples. And suddenly, it's a new reality that greets them. We're told, as they went, Jesus meets them. While John's account of this scene tells of Jesus talking to them at the tomb, it's in Matthew's account that includes this meeting of Jesus as they went on their way back to tell the disciples. They weren't expecting to meet Jesus. They only thought they were supposed to deliver this message to the disciples. They were only going to tell the men to go and see Jesus in Galilee. But grace comes and meets them as they go. And perhaps that is what we can learn from this interaction. You know, many times we are looking for assurances of a new reality, of a guarantee before we take action. We want to test drive the car before we buy it. We want to walk through a home and send in a home inspector before we put the offer down. We want to read the Amazon book preview before we click buy it. But it's different in the journey of faith with the living God. Most of the time, we find that God often gives us just enough assurance for us to take that first step. And it's when we take that step of faith that we discover the new reality meets us in surprising ways. Jesus' resurrection is the assurance of a new and future reality breaking into our world now. If we're given the grace to believe in this truth, the resurrection of Jesus is the one assurance that grounds all the other assurances of God. Because God has raised Jesus from the dead, all other promises of God are not just a possibility or just words that make you feel good, but they are a guaranteed reality. Jesus meets the women and says, "Greetings." Again, the English translation of Jesus' greeting in the NIV doesn't convey the full weight of what Jesus says here. The word "greetings" is not a translation of the typical shalom greeting found in Jewish culture, or "hello, how's it going" in Western culture. The Greek word recorded here is kairete, which means rejoice, be glad. It's a description of a state of happiness and well-being. In other words, Jesus is saying, "It's me. Be glad. My presence is going to change your reality." And that's the hope of Easter for me, in a world where our problems seem so systemic and insurmountable. Jesus is going ahead of me and helping me to see the world differently so I can be glad. Someone is at work. Someone is doing something about everything in the world that might burden me. Now, I have to admit that I've lived a relatively privileged life. And I define privilege not so much as enjoying wealth or status, although it can be that, but that's not my situation. Instead, I think that the privilege that many of us enjoy is simply an absence of significant obstacles or barriers. Privilege is an absence of significant obstacles and barriers that we have encountered in our lives. You know, privilege is having an alternative choice, that we actually have a choice if we face a significant obstacle or barrier. That's not something that everyone has. I've had some time to think about how I see the world in the recent weeks in light of this privilege. This week I met up with a pastor in the city, and amidst the sunshine and the blossoming trees at Lincoln Park, my scheduled one-hour meeting turned into a two-and-a-half-hour conversation as I listened to his story of growing up here in D.C., and what it's like to be a black man who has to deal with being pulled over for no good reason, and having to have a conversation with his children about why he gave them Western names instead of African names. We talked about the recent violence against Asian Americans and what it's like for me to walk down the street and wonder if people are going to treat me and my family differently because of the color of my hair and the shape of my eyes. It's something that I've never really had to be aware of, in spite of my privilege. We talked about how a black person questions whether their next encounter with law enforcement might go violently. But in the current environment, it seems that as an Asian person, any encounter has a chance of turning violent, and especially if they are elderly and Asian. We just don't know where it's going to come from. Yet in light of Easter, these fears and these frustrations don't have to be life-defining for me or for you. The resurrection of Jesus points to these three assurances that lift my eyes up from these circumstances that surround me and invite me to remember, he was raised from the dead. He is going ahead of you, and there you will see him. And that changes everything. It doesn't change everything now, but it changes how I see everything now. Because he lives, Jesus is at work. Because he lives, he is making all things new. And so I can be assured. And because he lives, you too can, so too can I live in light of the promise. And you can too. Jesus lives, and so we can be assured of hope, of life, and of a new reality that gives us true life now. This Easter, my prayer is that you might know this fullness of life that Jesus comes to offer to all who would lift our eyes to trust and to see him for who he is. May you be surprised by the resurrected Lord this Easter season. Amen.